We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning, and welcome to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. The producers for this show, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal, Jason Croft is at the controls. We're also happy to have back here on the program once again, Dennis Barron. He's professor of English and linguistics here at the University of Illinois. And every once in a while, he stops by. We talk about language. We give people the opportunity to ask questions about grammar. We also give people the opportunity to complain and complain about misuse, which is certainly complaints are welcome. We can, as I've said in the past, we cannot promise vindication, but complaints are certainly welcome. We have talked about how language changes over time, even though we don't always like that. We've talked about the fact that even though language changes, it's very resistant to deliberate efforts to change it. It changes when it wants to, not when we want to. And we always have a lot of fun when Dennis is here on the program. So any of all those sorts of questions are welcome. Usage questions, fine. Complaints, fine. Other questions about language, fine. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's the number to call. We have a toll-free line as well, 800-222-9455. And now questions by email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Dennis has a blog that you, if you're interested in language, you might like to look at his blog, The Web of Language. And he's also authored a number of books. And his most recent is titled A Better Pencil, Readers, Writers, and the Digital Revolution. It was published last year by the Oxford University Press. So you can go out and take a look at that. Thanks very much for being here.
So always glad to be here. The doctor is in.
And yeah, that's Dr. Grammar.
Yeah.
That's my Twitter moniker. Seriously,
yes.
Really?
Yeah. Right. So if you want to tweet.
Do you get many languages?
No, we're not quite there. We're not there yet.
Okay. We're a little behind the curve, technologically speaking.
Do we have a Facebook group?
No.
No.
Maybe sometime soon.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
But for the moment, the big new wrinkle is email.
Email.
You know, it only took us 30 years to get that one figured out. But
we're so 20th century.
I'm afraid so. But then, you know, I'm still analog.
You look analog. You do not look digital.
No, I'm not.
You're not bionic.
It's a little fuzzy. That's the problem. You wouldn't want to see me in digital. It's much too clear.
Yeah.
Every fault shows up. Exactly. Oh, I'm sorry. WILL does have a Facebook group, says Jason Croft. I mean, Focus 580 specifically.
Let's all go out and join. In fact, I could take my iPhone out and join it while we're
talking. Speaking of that.
Yes.
this, you know, for.
Sorry, my smartphone. We're not advertising particular products.
Smartphone. My phone is not smart. It's dumb. It knows how to make a call. That's all. Speaking of that, now, for a while now, various people have been doing this word of the year thing.
Yes.
And,
including me.
Including you. And the one of the.
Should that be including I? No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. And I have to think about that for a moment. The folks at it's the Oxford New American Dictionary.
Yes.
They got some publicity for this. They picked a word, and the reason I thought about that is we're starting to think about Facebook.
Yes.
Their word for the year is
unfriend.
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 And for people who don't do the Facebook thing, what does that mean?
To unfriend is to delete someone from your social networking site, whether it's Facebook or MySpace or your favorites on your contact list, whatever, to unfriend. And so here's the interesting thing about unfriend as word of the year, because I talked about this with my class, because it came out when school was still in session, U of I was still in session. I said, hey, you know, unfriend is a word of the year, according to Oxford New American. What do you think about this? And the students said, and most of them are English majors, and so they're concerned with the proper use of the language, said, well, the correct term is defriend. So, yeah.
Leave it to an English major.
Leave it to an English major. Even when you get something as, you know, radical as digital communication, which is supposed to be wild and lawless and, you know, leading the language down the path to destruction, there is a notion arising of what's correct to use and defriend rather than unfriend. However, if you do a Google search, which the folks at The New American did as one of their pieces of evidence gathering, you'll see that unfriend has, you know, millions of Google hits, whereas defriend is in the low hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
So unfriend is clearly the word of choice in the Twitter sphere, and out there
is
in this, cyberspace.
Is the Twitter is that actually a word?
Oh, yes.
Everything
is a word.
Okay. So
you
no know,
people
more.
People say ain't isn't a word, but yes.
No
it
more
is
can
a
you
word.
Say, well, yeah, yes. You may not like that
you
word.
You may not like it,
but
it is
a
word.
Yeah, okay. So is now the big indicator of usage?
Usage.
That's the way
usage.
You made,
the
you
the made, indicator of usage is usage.
Usage.
Amazing. Amazing. Could you believe it?
And so the way that's another thing if without Google we couldn't figure out how many did in the past did people
how did we live without Google?
Well, that's another question. How are we living with it? Maybe that's also another question.
Right. Well,
but in the past when people were doing that, they just sat down with books and newspapers and things and counted.
They counted.
How many?
By hand.
The frequency of where they really
were. Yeah. Lexicographers just, it was, when Samuel Johnson defined lexicographer as a harmless drudge, there's a lot of drudgery involved. There's a lot of busy work there.
Mm-hmm. So other than the fact that it's used so frequently. Anything else about unfriend that you think is particularly interesting or
the way
telling?
People, I think more interesting too is what people do and don't do on their social networking sites in terms of including and excluding people. There was an article in yesterday's New York Times about breaking up online. And the issues, and it was in the fashion and style section, not in the tech section. So this
really?
Is not David Pogue here. This is one of their fashion writers talking about this. And the issues were when you have a breakup, it's not just do you break up by text message or by tweet or on Facebook, and it's whether you then unfriend your ex or you leave your ex in your group of friends, and what are the different implications for doing these sorts of things. This is becoming now something that people are worrying about. You know, okay, right. So the relationship is over, at least for now, and if you keep someone in your friend list, does that mean it might rekindle? Does it mean... Or are you just trying to be? I mean, divorce lawyers are getting involved in these things, according to the article. It's amazing.
Well, there have been cases where one individual has taken legal action against another that person has said nasty things about them,
right.
In some electronic
or instead of hiring a private
form.
Detective, now
yes.
You can track your somebody's activities by their posts online and say, aha, you weren't where you said you were. What were you up to? Blah, 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 blah.
So is this yet another step down that road that says eventually there will be no more privacy?
Oh, yes. Privacy. I mean, if you ask the people at the big Google and those sorts of sites where all they're doing is collecting data about us and selling it to the highest bidder, they will simply tell you privacy is dead. Privacy is a non-issue anymore. You cannot be private as you once thought you could.
Do you personally have a word of the year for 2009?
Oh, yeah.
And what is your word?
I'm going blank now. What was my word of the year? You can look up on my blog.
Oh, okay. Well, we can talk with
some
people.
One of the callers can look it up.
Let's do that. Then they can tell us what your word of the year is. Dennis Barron is our guest. He's a professor of English at the University of Illinois. Occasionally is on the program. We talk about language and whatever.
My word of the year was teabag.
Teabag. Oh, as in like the Tea Party political activist. Yes. I think that's on
But I also declared a word of the decade, which I think is more interesting.
And that is?
Wingnut.
Wingnut.
It is the wingnut decade. It is the decade of wingnuts.
As in crazy person.
As in crazy person, yeah. Not as in the piece of hardware.
The actual
thing. The actual piece of
and
hardware.
And if people know what a wingnut is.
Which is a very useful piece of hardware. I've got wingnuts in my toolkit.
It's a very elegant little piece of thing.
I've got a great picture of it on my blog.
Wingnut.
Of an actual wingnut. Yeah, because look at, I mean, it is 10 years of crazy people doing things. Flying planes, everything from flying planes into buildings to swindling people out of their life savings to you know, all that stuff. It's to teabaggers.
Well, I think,
you know, protesting taxes and healthcare reform and all this. It's a decade that brought out the nutcases.
And that makes me think.
And they're not just harmless nutcases. These are nutcases that actually did damage.
That it was, and I'm wondering, is it the American Dialect Society?
Voting tonight. They're voting this afternoon. They're in Baltimore as we speak.
Baltimore.
As we speak, and sometime later this afternoon at the business meeting, they will elect the word of the year, the word most likely to succeed, a whole bunch of categories of stuff.
And in their category of word of the decade, that's why I was thinking about that, 9/11
is
one of them. There's also blog, Google, green, text as a verb, and war on terror. That's sort of the words of the decade. But I think at least some of those, and 9/11 expresses that same sort of idea.
It was a
time when things were really churned up. Very high level of anxiety.
Yeah, I mean, all kinds of bad things happened. The economy went sour. We got involved in two wars. There was terrorism. What good came out of it? This is why I call it the decade with no name either, because there's no single way of characterizing it that is useful.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with some folks. Charleston, we'll start out there. Charleston, line 4. Hello. Is there a caller there and on line 4? Oh, hold on. Is there a caller line 4 there?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Yes.
Sorry. I have two questions, and I hope they're language related. One deals with the use of the word term decade. We're in a new decade.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall back in 2000, people were saying we were in the new millennium, and we weren't. So,
but we were.
There's one question.
We were. What? We were. Because people said we were.
Oh, well,
yes.
All right.
Yes. A decade is any group of 10 years. You can start a decade any time you want.
I suppose a millennium is any group of 1,000 years.
That's right.
But
there
was at least the argument.
Yes, there was the argument, and nobody listened to it.
Are there those sticklers who insist that a decade is similarly begins with the first year?
And I think people are arguing about that right now.
They're arguing about it as we speak. Yeah. When I declared the word of the decade and I was reading about things, you know, reading different news articles, other people were talking similarly. All these people said, well, the decade doesn't start till next year. If you didn't think the millennium started on January 1st, 2000, that's fine, but you got to miss out on all the great fireworks.
And
you know,
nobody
if you
was
wait,
doing it the next
2001,
year.
2001, it was just not such a
it
big
was
thing.
Nothing.
I mean, it's probably easier to get a reservation at a nice place for dinner in 2001. But you just missed the celebration.
It does seem to me that the decade can begin as this one. I'm saying this one is beginning with 10, because then it's all the tens, it's all the aughts, it's all the twos. It's more easily.
And they say, okay, well, we have a name for the second decade of the 20th century. We called the teens, but then some people say, well, but 2010, 2011, 2012, those aren't teens. And, you know, when you were 10, 11, and 12, there was the debate about whether you could call yourself a teenager or not.
So we're
and
in
stuff
the
preteens? Like we're in the preteens, yeah.
Right.
Troubling.
And
very troubling.
I am hearing
it's a troubled time.
This year as 2010.
Yes, 2010.
That's
I haven't heard that one yet. 2010, I've heard a lot. 2010.
Here's a second question.
011, though, just the, on. 011 is not going to do it.
No.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
when we refer to such things as the Great Depression of the 30s.
Yes.
Or
which started in 1929. but who's counting?
or that the, you know, the tumultuous 60s. Apostrophe or no apostrophe?
Ah. I don't put an apostrophe, but I think it's a choice.
I've been seeing it more and more often in reputable publications.
Well, sure, it's a choice, I think.
Oh, okay. To me, it looks possessive. So,
oh, see, you mean in the
right 60 when you write it? When you write it,
1930 apostrophe S or no apostrophe
or the 60s when you write it out in numbers instead of in letters. Mm-hmm. I stopped using an apostrophe a while ago, but I believe it's a choice.
I wish I had you as my English teacher in third grade.
Okay.
Yeah, the guy's much too mellow. That's the problem.
I am too mellow. I don't know if I could deal with a class of third graders.
That's all right. Thank you
very
much.
Thank you
very
much.
Well, you are welcome.
Thank you. We will go on. The next is someone who is in Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Hi. I would like to propose or create a new word.
Okay.
Instead of having to type out email address, why don't we say e-dress?
E-dress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Seems clear enough.
It's fine.
I'll just...
How are you going to... Okay, so it's easy to make up words. What's hard is to sell them to other people.
Yeah.
So how are you going to franchise this word? How are you going to get it? I mean, you can get Stephen Colbert to talk about it, and you have an instant audience of millions of people. That's what he did with, I'm going blank again. What were?
Well, I guess I don't know.
Right. Okay. Well, that'll come back. But anyway, this is one way of promoting a word is getting it out. You know,
exactly.
In some kind of high profile.
I've been
public
using
forum.
It. Myself.
You've been using it, but this is the first time I've heard you use it.
Right, and I don't know if...
And now all our listenership here at WLL, all 20 people who aren't out shoveling
from now on, start using it. We'll see what we can do.
Right, okay. we're gonna mandate it, but who's gonna follow the mandate? That's the problem.
I guess I'll appoint myself to do that.
Okay,
launch a campaign.
get a Twitter account and tweet it, and that's another way of
from now on, henceforth.
You got to get it to go viral. That's the expression.
Exactly.
Thank you. Well, actually, I think it seems to be pretty clear that you would understand what it is. I think, and that's a good because we seem to like streamlining things.
Yes.
So that would seem like
email is itself a streamlining of electronic mail, condensation, a shortening of
your e-dress.
Your e-dress.
Well, I like that. Okay, e-dress. From now we're going to start using e-dress.
But we use your email as a synonym for
your email.
What's your email?
Yeah.
And that's even shorter than e-dress. Fewer letters.
Okay, let's forget it.
It's not gonna. I hate to tell,
Well, that does lead to the question.
People's
why it isn't that
dreams
certain
get
things
wrapped up in a word, and then you just crush them.
It's all disappointment.
Don't call us; we'll call you.
Right. Why is it that some new words take off and some
it's hard to
don't.
Say. It's hard to say. Something catches a wave, and it can. Go viral. A lot of people pick it up, and even then, it can spin out very quickly, and it'll be on everybody's lips one day, and then a year later, or even a few months later, it's gone. Something else has come along, and sometimes these stay. Sometimes it stays, and really becomes a part of the language. Some of them are ephemeral. And some of them are keepers.
Okay. Our guest this morning, Dennis Barron. He's a professor of English at the University of Illinois. And every once in a while, he's here on the program. We talk about language. Questions, comments, welcome. Usage questions are welcome too. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Champagne is next. Line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Back to Unfriend. One of the several broadcasts that have announced this said that it was in use several centuries ago. They evidently looked it up in the OED.
Yes, yes. But not in the context of social networking sites.
No, just, of course not.
Just, yeah, you know, just a negative prefix added to friend. Friend is a verb, to friend somebody. Has, you know, to befriend someone.
Well, I thought that might help it win out over defriend, which doesn't really have the euphemy.
Right, and it doesn't have the history. I think that the popularity of Unfriend has nothing to do with its history, though, because people who use it are completely unaware of even perhaps the existence of the Oxford English Dictionary. And some would say of the existence of the English language itself. But we won't go that far because we think unfriend is a great word.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. And other questions are welcome. You have you'd like to nominate a word of the year? Call right ahead. Or again, you want to ask questions about
usage? The
board
is not lighting up. I think we have been unfriended.
It's possible, and it wouldn't surprise me. In fact, I wouldn't blame anybody.
Does this happen to you a lot? Because it happens to me all the time.
Constantly. And back in the day, we used to call it shunning.
Shunning. Yes.
But now it's unfriended.
Yes, in central Illinois.
Absolutely. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455.
It's so junior high to do that.
Well, it kind of is, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Yes. Well, the whole business of friending
social
and
networks bring out the preteen in us all.
It is. Well, and that's, I think, actually, that's a reminder that the preteen never really goes away.
Never goes away.
You have
away.
To have something to lure him or her out.
So
it's
we
always
need
there.
And
it's always there.
Exorcism.
Let me make a note of that. An exorcism.
Yes. So people are calling now because they you know.
They're desperate for us to stop talking.
I don't know if you remember WBAI in New York City, one of the Pacifica stations in the 1960s when they had their fund drive. Every once in a while when no one was calling in, they would put on a recording of Kate Smith singing God Bless America, and they would play it, and they would say, we're going to keep playing this over and over again, and somebody calls and makes a pledge.
And did that work?
It worked. Have you ever heard that recording?
Well, yeah, actually, I think I probably have.
It didn't take long.
I think I probably have.
It was the kind of listenership who didn't like that recording.
Mm-hmm. I hope no one from our development staff is now listening.
I have a feeling that if you did that around here, people would just listen to it.
Maybe. Or maybe they just turn off the radio and go on to Facebook.
The political climate being what it is in central Illinois, I think they'd like that.
Cold.
That song.
That's what it is.
Okay.
Fithian. Let's talk with someone there. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm a teacher, and I have a big problem trying to get kids to use a dictionary.
Uh-huh.
And actually, I teach biology, so if you know the derivations of words, lots of problems go away. And I was wondering if there's some kind of place you can find a low-gradient way to get, like, worksheets or something that just get the fire lit in them, because once the kids, they catch it, it's just a dream because you don't have to worry about them anymore. So I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay.
How to get kids to use a dictionary. Well, I guess the best way would be to get the folks at Microsoft to improve
the
so-called dictionary.
Clue them to the online dictionary.
Word processor.
Yeah.
I mean, Merriam-Webster online is free and available, so anybody can use that. But how do you get people to actually, I mean, I don't, you know, there was a time, and dictionaries still sell pretty well, these desk dictionaries, college dictionaries, the 80 to 100,000 word size.
Mm-hmm.
Dictionaries. There was a time when everybody had a dictionary, and you know, anybody who graduated from high school, you gave them a dictionary as a present because they would either take it off to college with them or they would use it. And so, you know, I once did this little investigation of what people did with their dictionaries, and I think most people use them to press flowers and to prop up uneven table legs and stuff like that. I mean, we all had these dictionaries, and I think most people didn't. They felt comforted by the fact that they were there on your desk, and you feel comforted by the fact that you can bookmark Merriam-Webster, or you can look up the spelling of a word on your Microsoft word processor, and it'll tell you that. But I don't think people use them much. In other words, I think it's always been a problem to get people to use
even people when people they had them.
Yeah.
They weren't using them.
Yeah.
Is there any more a standard reference shelf that you would expect that people? I'm thinking of things like
whatever comes bundled with your
quotations. Whatever actually comes.
Yeah, I mean, students are all using these thesauruses or thesauri.
What is the plural?
I think it's either one. It is a Greek word, so you could use the thesauri.
Okay.
Plural. I've been told I like thesauruses myself, but the computerized one just gives you a list of synonyms with none of the nuance, and so when you get students who are trying to vary their vocabulary usage by just clicking on one of the options that pops up when they highlight the key, they often use the word in a way that it is jarring. It really isn't idiomatic, students used to use the thesaurus, the Roget,
the paper one,
the same way. Yeah. They would just look up the head word and find a bunch of 20, 30 synonyms, pick one that sounded impressive, something that would knock the teacher's socks off, and I can use a big word, I'll get a big grade, kind of thing, and same sort of thing. We've got all of these references available to us, and we're not necessarily using them any better at all. I mean, the big issue, even more than these dictionaries and thesauruses, is what do you do with Wikipedia? It is so easy to get online information in milli, micro, nanoseconds about something, and very often we don't even the speed of getting the information trumps the reliability of the information that we get. We don't even bother to check on it or to triangulate it, see if other sources confirm or elaborate on it.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with some other listeners here. We'll go next to someone who is in McLean County, line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a question, totally different off topic, but just the fact that I realized who you were, I thought I'd better ask someone who knows. When I read a book, every once in a while I'll find a word or a couple words that are framed in a bracket or like a rectangular bracket.
Yes.
Why? I have not yet ever figured that one out. Because I've tried to look through context, are they emphasizing? Can you skip the word? Is it substituting for something else?
Okay, so there are different reasons for putting a text in square brackets.
Okay.
And I'd have to know the individual example to probably figure out what was going on in that particular instance. They're kind of parenthetical remarks. Sometimes you will see inside a square bracket the Latin word sic, S-I-C, which means that it's an exact transcription of what is being quoted rather than an error introduced by the person transcribing it. So, it indicates that the form is original rather than accidental. They're usually some form of parenthetical information.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
And there is a convention of using the sort of rounded brackets, and then if you have a parenthesis inside that, you put that in square brackets inside the rounded brackets.
Okay.
Then you start double bracketing and triple bracketing if you...
Right.
You know.
Then you're separating just a bracket from another.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Well, is there, though, a convention that sometimes you use the rounded ones and sometimes you use the square ones, or is that a matter of... You may use whichever you choose.
I always use the rounded ones, except for, you know, square brackets for something like thus or sick. And in some bibliographic conventions, you put a square bracket inside a rounded bracket, things like that. Otherwise, I don't use square brackets all that much. I use a lot of dashes, though.
Yeah.
When I write in my prose as a punctuation mark. Very Emily Dickinson kind of.
Let's see. What are we doing here? I don't know. We're a little bit past the midpoint. Dennis Barron is our guest. He's a professor of English here at the University of Illinois. Occasionally he's on the show. We talk about language, how it changes, how it's stubborn and resistant to change. People can ask questions about grammar or make complaints about misuse. We started out talking about words of the year, words of the decade, and you know, all that's certainly fine. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And email will-talk@illinois.edu. We will next talk with someone in line four, and that's Monticello. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I called in for another reason, but just on the bracket thing, I type one-handed in lowercase.
Yes.
Usually, and square brackets are the only ones that are in lowercase. So.
Okay.
That's why I use them.
Good a reason as any.
Yeah. As far as what I was calling about, one trend that I, or two trends that I've noticed over the last few years is the people buying stuff that they throw away, buying computers, and then the computer gets outdated, but it's still good.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to throw it away because they've got a newer one that's faster. In the language, I've noticed... that seemingly concurrently, there was a change of kind of an expletivization to make up a word for words to throw away something or put it in the garbage, like we used to say. It became pitch or trash or toss something, and a lot of times they were. A lot of people use those terms almost like an expletive, like with some form of disgust when they say it. And I think it may have something to do with the fact that they're kind of rationalizing throwing away something that's still good or something that when they bought it was not well enough made that it couldn't last.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds. I mean, how something works its way from useful to pitchable to garbage, and then there's. I mean, we do have the category of recyclable, and so I guess a lot of people don't bother recycling, and things go from. From useful to junk, there's no middle category. But there's certainly a significant movement to try to reclaim that middle ground. And you know, okay, so you've got a faster computer. There's certainly someone who can use a computer that you are de-accessioning, as the librarians say.
You can either donate it
or I mean, why is it that eBay is such a and similar trading places, Craigslist is such a big business now that people are selling off not just sending to the recycler or donating to some organization, but actually selling off the stuff that they don't want anymore. They're not immediately pitching it, trashing it, tossing it. So there, you know, there is an awareness, I think, that just because you don't use something anymore, somebody else can find it useful.
Yeah, and I think, well, also, the tendency to throw away stuff is much less, or at least buy this stuff now is much less because people don't have the money as much.
Right. Yes. If you start thinking about, you know, your purchases more carefully, you're going to try to get. I mean, you know, you try to get something that's going to last a while. But
so
it doesn't always work.
It'll be interesting to see if people go back to saying, throw it away.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I realized, I was for my book, A Better Pencil, there are a lot of illustrations in it, and one of the things I was trying to look for was old models of certain computers. You know, the first Apple computer, early IBM PC, things like that. Locating them so that I could go and photograph them was in some cases problematic. But I did manage to track a lot of them down here at the university. There are people who keep some of the older technologies around just as examples to show their students, and some of them are still working.
Hmm. Yeah, well, the working ones that I've seen on eBay go for pretty high.
Yeah. So we're not trashing everything. This is true. This is good. I think this is a reason for some optimism.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Let's go to someone else. Effingham here, line one. Hello.
Yes, hello. I, throughout my writing life, have been accused of using, I called it the thyarsis, but you made a different pronunciation of that word, which I never did do. I've looked at them and have a few, but the use of it, I find the dictionary a better instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have not a large collection, but a collection of old and new dictionaries.
Yes.
The one I use most is printed in 1958, I think. And then I have a set of three large Britannica International dictionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience has been when I research through old, middle times, and newer dictionaries that I find a different nuance for a word
mm-hmm.
that I want
sure.
to use. And I just can't say enough good about the dictionary and the use of that and enlightening oneself and being accurate. But I have a question about, I interpreted the little letters S-I-C
mm-hmm.
as spelling incorrect. And I got some enlightenment today from yourself.
Right, it's a Latin word, sick,
yes.
And it means thus.
That a bit ago.
Yeah.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
And then that was enlightening.
Mm-hmm.
The bracketing, the square bracketing, I use occasionally, probably wrongly now, to emphasize mainly the word is, and is, which I thought.
Ah, okay. So the other thing that square brackets tend to get used for is just popped into my head is when you are quoting a text, but you are making an emendation to the text so that it reads more fluidly. So that if for example you are quoting something from inside a sentence, but in the context of your quotation it's the beginning of a sentence, you put the capital letter in a square bracket and then the rest of the word you print out normally to indicate that you've supplied the capital, but the capital's not there in the original. This is a little bit recherché, I suppose, a little bit too detailed for most people's interest, and it makes terrible radio. But it just popped into my head.
Well, I find the program very, very interesting and enlightening today. I want to leave with this word. I've learned it. I've heard it a long time ago, but using it, I have not done so.
Mm-hmm.
Discombobulation.
Yes.
And so I looked at it. It means...
It's how I live my life.
Yes. Most of us do. Okay, well, thanks very much.
And if you don't know what it means, look it up.
You bet.
Thank you
very
much.
That's part of my reasoning.
Yeah.
You know, if someone is interested, understand, and then they get the old dictionary, and there it goes. So, but it's very enlightening, and I want to thank you and David very much.
All right. Well,
you're
thank
welcome.
You for the call. It makes me think about the fact that at home I have the dictionary that I have, and I think that I only have one actually print dictionary at home. It is an old dictionary, and I think it's maybe from the 20s possibly, or
mm-hmm.
the 30s. I think it's pre-war, and I like it a lot, and I mm-hmm. actually do use it quite often.
They did print dictionaries before the war, yes.
I thank you, Father, for reminding me that things did happen before I was born. And I'm thinking about it now. I wonder whether there how many
I've been
words.
I've told they printed dictionaries.
Well, I know you weren't around. That's before your time.
I was born in the last years of the war.
Oh, I see. Wonder whether or how many words there might actually be in that particular dictionary that mm-hmm. in a modern dictionary actually wouldn't
sure.
be there.
Sure. One of the things that happens and that's harder to track for most people is the words that go into disuse because you don't notice that you're not using a particular word until you get suddenly reminded of it by mm-hmm. coming across mm-hmm. you know, in an older book or somebody mentions it and you say, oh, I haven't heard that in a while. People aren't using that. I mean, how many people do you hear using the word floppy disk anymore? Probably not too many. And that's a word that is, what, 20, 30 years old?
Yeah.
You know, used to be the way that we stored all our computer data on floppy disks. And they were floppy. The 5 1/4-inch disks were and the bigger ones were floppy. Once they got to 3 1/2-inch disks, they really weren't floppy. They were in these hard plastic cases.
But we still called them floppy
disks.
Yeah.
And hard drives aren't, I think, very hard either. But, I mean, that term we still have, but floppy disk.
It's gone.
It's in the computer museum now.
Let's talk with some other folks. Going next to Indiana. Line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Couple things in regard to the last talker collecting old dictionaries. I do that too, but what I really like to collect are old reference books,
mm-hmm.
particularly ones that are called encyclopedias or something like that. I have a set that's got 8 volumes, for example, and it's on old paper. Eventually, going to turn into dust. But the things I like about it is that you can get more information about somebody who was perhaps fairly well known, say 1932.
Right.
Then in 45, they bring out a book, and there's maybe just 2 sentences about him, and mm-hmm. then eventually he's gone.
Yeah.
You go into some of his old things, you find out who some of the people were he was dealing with and why things actually went the way they were.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really wanted to go after was whether or not there is a name for the following situation. I've noticed over the past few years, especially listening to this station and to WBBM, for example, the announcers who are usually taken as, saying what's supposed to be proper, for those of us here in the Middle English world. From it's 8:05, ladies and gentlemen, to 8:05. Uh-huh. Now, an O is an entirely different fellow than a zero. Of course, the Germans take care of it with a, the crossed line.
Mm-hmm.
But if you enter that by how you speak, you're going to have a lot of trouble on your computer, as a friend of mine found out.
Exactly.
But I just wondered if there is a name for that phenomenon where some letter takes on some, what are you going to call it? Anyway, the zero is now replaced by the word O, and practically everywhere now. And I've got out of use of correcting people. They look at me like I'm crazy, because they haven't been around very long to know about how important that was that all this started sliding into the computer world. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Okay, I don't know if there's a name for it. There should be a name for it. Somebody probably has thunk up a name for it, but if they have, it has not reached my consciousness. And it's true. One of the places where this becomes an issue is when you're talking to an automated telephone answerer. When you call the airlines, for example, and they want your flight number, they respond to O. They don't respond to zero. So when I, if there's a zero on my flight number, and I initially thought, oh, I'm supposed to say the zero, so the American Airlines would say, we can't find any reference to that flight, and they're always very cheery about it, the voice, the automated voice. But if you say the O, if you say it as an O, as if it were a letter rather than a number, flight 4035, 4035,
Then they
seem to they pick up on. So they've been programmed, the software for these things have been programmed to recognize the O rather than the zero. But if you're calling something else and reading off a credit card number, they want that zero, even automated. So it is problematic as the caller suggests, and certainly in conversational speech we use the O.
And is there some way to explain why it is we do that? Why we like the O and we
don't
say
know.
Zero?
I don't know why, except maybe that the O is easier to say in connected speech than zero because it's one syllable instead of two.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's something I guess I hadn't. I think I may do both. Although now that I'm thinking of it, if I'm giving a zip code on the air, I'm pretty sure that I probably would say 618-01,
yeah,
and not say
618-01
zero. And I imagine I probably have. I'm sure other people have said yes, 805, 806.
Sure, and it is. I mean, what are you going to say, 805?
Yeah, well, that doesn't.
The time at the tone will be 805.
It is 0500. All right.
Yeah, they don't say 0500.
No, they don't say 0500 in the military either.
That's right. And who's going to argue with somebody with a gun?
Not me. Champagne is next. Line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
For the gentleman who was wanting a way to coax children to use the dictionary, I know a teacher who has had considerable luck by telling them that this was a secret code and the dictionary was the decoder.
Okay. Okay.
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, certainly the one way to get them to look in the dictionary is to tell them not to.
Not to.
Stay away from that.
Stay away from the dictionary.
It's bad for you, son.
Right. I mean, any kid with any smarts is going to know that if you want to know what those dirty words mean, you got to have a big dictionary.
That's right.
Look it up.
I guess the earlier caller didn't say whether you talked about the fact that, well, now everybody's got a computer. Mm-hmm. Probably most people have a computer. It comes with some kind of dictionary.
Yeah.
And then there are online dictionaries. The kids are not looking at the paper dictionary, or they're not looking at the dictionary at all. I mean,
right,
they're just not using that function in whatever form it exists.
Probably. That's probably what he's complaining about.
Yes,
is my guess.
Yes. That you can't get them to even use the online ones.
Can't even use the online dictionary. Mm-hmm. Don't even use the spell check.
And it's such a great thing, spell check. I'm a terrible speller. The only problem with spell check is if it's actually a real word, it can't tell that you meant T-H-E-R-E as opposed to T-H-E-I-R.
Right. Right. That's right. So it needs human eyes as well.
Yeah.
It's not context sensitive.
Yeah. Rockford, line 4. Hello.
Yes, this is such an interesting conversation. I was going to comment on recycling when I heard that, but now I'm going to comment on the use of words and letter O and so forth. You have to remember that the letter O on the telephone is the number 6. So if they say dial 206 or 208, that means 268, if you want to interpret it the way the telephone dial is. And you should also note that the military and aerospace definitely never use O for zero because of the confusion that it can make. And where it's so important to communicate numerical data, they never use O for the number zero.
Okay.
And then I had another comment about use of words. It's common now to use the word like between phrases and between words. Maybe every other word is like, if you're a youngster.
Mm-hmm.
And then the two words you know,
mm-hmm,
which have no meaning the way they're commonly used. And then another use of words that is wrong by many people, including our top politician, is the word got. We've got to fix this situation. What it really means is we have to fix this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I just wanted to mention those things and see what you thought about them.
All right. Well, we're very short on time here. Let's see what he thinks
okay.
about them.
Okay. The short answer is there's nothing wrong with them, but some people find them annoying.
These sort
the fillers,
of
you know,
those
like,
things. Is that
people are very
is that
annoying.
Always a feature? Has that always been a feature of speech?
Yeah. Maybe not those particular ones, but things
like
stuff like that. We use them to indicate when we're talking that we're not done talking, that we are pausing somehow to think about what we're saying and don't jump in because I'm not done yet. They're placeholders. And what gets annoying is if people use them too much and they become kind of a stylistic feature rather than being a placeholder and people just sort of throw them in. Mm-hmm. Unconsciously, listeners tend to feel that they are unmotivated and are not being used. Literally, when you say, you know, they say, well, I don't know. Or you know, so it's not being used literally. Well, too bad about that because much of language is not being used literally. If you were to insist on the literal meanings of words, you'd have a lot of trouble saying anything.
Well, at that...
And as far as got goes, to quote our president,
yes.
Look. it's an Americanism. You've got to do this. There's no way around it. It's totally idiomatic. Nothing wrong with it at all. If you don't like it, I'm sorry, but it's not going to go away.
No. We must stop.
Go away.
We must go away.
We got to go.
We have to go.
When
you
got to go,
you
got to
go. But I'm sure that Dennis will come back someday.
I'm sure he will.
I appreciate it. Dennis Barron, he's professor of English at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. He's written a number of books. His most recent is A Better Pencil, Readers, Writers, and the Digital Revolution, published last year by the Oxford University Press. Also, you can look at his blog. It's The Web of Language if you're interested in language issues.
Yes.
And, yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.